Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brexit podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and today I'm on my own. I was meant to be joined by my co-host, Jennifer Hahn, who has been out in Thailand practicing some Muay Thai, which is Thai boxing. We've mentioned that once or twice, so a few keen listeners might have known that. Well, I'm pleased to report that Jen got back safe and sound. Unfortunately, she became so keen on Muay Thai that she decided to practice it over the weekend, and she's managed to do a backing. So I did see her today, and she looked rather pained. I think she's going to be okay, but we decided we were going to give her the night off, which is a shame because we have been discussing, away from the mic, a different way of doing the Tuesday episode, and we thought with so much breaking Brexit news all of the time, it would be good to do a week in Brexit roundup and look at some of the bigger issues, and then we'd still save the Thursday episode for a bit more of a deeper conversation. We'd still do the same interview format, and we tackle one specific subject. So without further ado, I'm going to have a little look back to the past week in Brexit, and these are going to be some of the highlights. So we're going to kick off with a Times report on photographed government documents that include speech notes for Tim Hitchens, the Economic and Consular Affairs Director General at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. And his suggestion, which is not going to come as a great surprise to anybody right at the moment who's looking to tighten the belt buckles and make sure we get the best deal possible, is that trade will be prioritised over environmental issues in UK diplomatic efforts. Like I said, no surprise, but I guess there's going to be a lot of sadness amongst environmentalists. The quote, trade and growth are now priorities for all posts. You will need to prioritise developing capability in this area. Some economic security related work like climate change and illegal wildlife change will be scaled down. So I guess what he means is the actually tackling illegal wildlife trade will be scaled down a little bit. All's going to be revealed in a couple of weeks on that one, on April the 26th, when this speech actually airs. Sticking with the subject of wildlife trade, who thought wildlife trade twice in one Brexit podcast, looking at a piece from The Guardian. Now, whether this is really about Brexit or whether this is just The Guardian wanting to do a Brexit is bad story, I'm not entirely sure. But they've been in touch with Zach Scholl of Twy Cross Zoo, and the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums has said leaving the EU without a deal could threaten already endangered species whose survival depends on easy access to Europe-wide breeding. So this is, again, as I said, taken from The Guardian. The logic behind this, Zach says, there are more than 400 breeding programs operated by EAZA, ASA. These breeding programs are there to ensure that the genetic and population survival of those species we have in captivity. So it kind of makes sense. It gets quite technical. Computer software does the matching. Each breeding program has a coordinator. And if it's time to move the animal, if there's a lone animal, or if it's old enough to leave its family group, or a new zoo requires that the species will contact the zoo and recommends it will be involved in the breeding program, there are different ways that can all be done for different animals. And it has to be done, his point, cooperatively between all the different countries. So Shaul says the animals aren't owned by each zoo. So it's not a case of loaning one out, then getting it back, but they're actually moved around all the time. So he makes the example, imagine moving a giraffe, which makes some kind of sense, I guess. Not the easiest animal. It's not going to go simply into a crate. So he quotes an example of one a few years ago. One came from Ireland. He was put into essentially a giant horse box with an adjustable roof, which could be made as tall as needed. It was pulled by a truck and onto a ferry. I had a colleague at a different zoo go and pick up some bears too. So, you know, another unexpected result of Brexit. I think, really, is this about Brexit or is this just the need for us to try and cooperate as much as possible? Is it all right to let truckers wait in four-hour queues? But, you know, what about those giraffes and bears? No one wants to have an angry bear in transit. Enough on that story, moving on. surprise, surprise, the next topic is immigration. Now, this is from a poll that was conducted, but I'm sure that was, when I say conducted, I'm sure that was actually probably paid for by Lord Ashcroft. Now, Lord Ashcroft, he's the peer behind the book Call Me Dave, the unauthorized biography of David Cameron, which raised the Piggate scandal. I'm not going to go over that again. He's also got plenty of money to poll these 10,000 voters because he is the 74th richest man in Britain and worth $1.32 billion. Now, that's according to Wikipedia. Or Sunday Times reached this 2015, so you know, let's give them a bit of credit and say they're not going to be too far off the mark with that. Anyway, what was Ashcroft's finding from the poll? 42% of all voters saw immigration control as the priority of a potential trade-off with gaining access to the single market in Brexit talks, compared with 34% who thought the reverse. So there we have it. Immigration is still top of the agenda. And when asked to rank the importance of various negotiating outcomes without trade-offs, tariff-free trade was top with 73%, followed by halting EU budget payments on 71%, and then the freedom from the ECJ judgments, so the European Court of Justice judgments, on 64%. Sticking with a migration-related issue, The Times has reported that there have been calls to stop unskilled migrants moving to Britain in order to cut the annual net migration below 50,000, and that's divided leading Brexiters. I think the key here is unskilled migrants. Leave means leave. The Hard Brexit Campaign Group released a report yesterday calling for a 5-year halt to unskilled migration. It believes it would lead to greater opportunities for the 826,000 British UK to 24-year-olds who aren't working. Tory Brexiters wanted to support the Prime Minister but pointed to a serious mismatch between Theresa May's views on immigration and what many of the MPs want. There is a white paper being drawn up on immigration in post-Brexit Britain, and currently the feelings are that they're likely to promise a visa system that places a few controls on highly skilled workers but more on lower skilled migration, whilst ensuring that business has access to the skills it needed. So once again, with many of these Brexits, it's Brexit white papers or memos. It's a wish list of all the, I guess, obvious things in many sense. And it remains to be seen what comes out of the negotiations. Let's jump north of the border with Scottish former First Minister of Scotland, Alex Salmond, who he's claimed that many of the EU states back Scotland's calls for independence, such as Alfonso Dastis, Spain's foreign minister, and Almar Brok, a German MEP and key ally of Angela Merkel. So maybe true what Alex says. However, you would hardly expect him to come out and say, well, we want to be independent from England and the rest of the UK, but actually Europe don't want us. So maybe Alex, not the best person to turn to for that, but I guess what it does show is that Scottish independence and the noise around that's not going away anytime soon. Let's turn back to the beleaguered NHS. We know they're cash-strapped. We hear that all the time. So they're looking for a £10 billion boost from hedge funds. So I guess the Brexit link here is that, not the fact that it's £350 million on the side of a bus, which was used for the referendum, of course, that we would save. However, what we have now is the thoughts from the NHS, and particularly the chief executive of the financial regulator NHS Improvement, Jim Mackey, who does not believe that Brexit is going to alleviate any cash worries, certainly in the near future. The health unions, however, have called the discussions a cry for help from managers, hedge funds or investment companies, some of which are known for aggressive strategies. So is this doing a deal with the devil? The backstop to this is that no deal can be signed without Treasury approval. Jonathan Ashworth, the shadow health secretary, said, it's shocking that NHS leaders are in secret negotiations with hedge fund bosses. Theresa May has refused to respond to the needs of crumbling hospitals, aging equipment, or provide the necessary investment in community facilities. If you're listening to this today, which is Tuesday, then keep an eye out for inflation figures later on. They have been tipped to be reach the highest level for more than 3 years. It's forecast to be at 2.3% for the second month running. That comes directly from Reuters. And labour market figures are going to be released on Wednesday, which should offer some new insights onto whether the looming Brexit negotiations have started to affect hiring decisions and will shed light on whether pay growth is keeping pace with inflation or if our incomes are falling in real terms. Economists forecast the average pay growth slipped to 2.2% in the last 3 months to February compared with a year earlier. Howard Archer, who's chief UK and European economist at the consultancy IHS Markit, said we expect inflation to reach 3% before the end of 2017. It could well rise further to a peak of 3.3% in the early months of 2018. So the weakening pound, while it might be good for tourists, does have inflationary impacts. However, it is not all doom and gloom. The BBC have reported that the outlook for the city has improved after Brexit. The outlook for the UK financial sector has improved since Brexit was triggered, the policy chief of the City of London Corporation said. Mark Bolliet said London would remain a leading financial hub with only a few banking jobs likely to move. He wants speedy trade talks. He said we'd hope the negotiations go quickly and well. He's not saying a huge amount there, is he? Obviously, the two-year trigger has now happened with the triggering of Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty. We have had noises from a few of the banks, including Goldman Sachs, HSBC, UBS, saying they're going to move some jobs out of London as a result of Brexit. And Lloyd's of London has announced plans to open a Brussels subsidiary in early 2019. But Bolliet refutes things that people are all going to be a mad exodus. No one's going to say we're closing down in London, he says. Where things have come to a bit of a standstill, though, is in Gibraltar, where Joe Duggan, who was our guest on last Thursday's show, dropped me an email to say, thanks for putting the show up. Great listen. However, I am now stuck in 4 hours of traffic at the border, and things don't look like improving anytime soon. So we talked a little bit about how Spanish border control would play havoc with Gibraltar in the past episode, with the thousands that move across the border on a daily basis. And is this just the start of some of the Brexit shenanigans that come with having a hard border? I guess time will tell. This one caught my eye. This is on voluntarism, which is from the Financial Times. Again, it reverts back to the city, and it's exploring alternative ways to make EU markets a success after Brexit. So lawyers are combing through existing agreements that could allow UK-based firms to strike trade deals on a firm-by-firm basis, or even for individual lines of business. So it's stepping outside the country-to-country trade agreements. Jonathan Herbs of the law firm Norton Rose Fulbright said, think of it a bit like a manufacturer from a third country wants to sell goods in the EU markets. If you want in, you have to sign up voluntarily to meet all the packaging, labelling and product safety standards. So it already exists on a piecemeal basis in financial markets. Britain has what is known as the Overseas Persons Exclusion, which allows individual foreign firms to gain unregulated access to UK markets so long as they are not physically present in the country and they abide by certain rules and deal only with institutional clients. So Herb's point is that there's a key advantage that's going to bypass the need for a political deal or new primary legislation. It may not be all singing, all dancing solution, he says, but a surprising amount could be achievable through small voluntary steps. And finally, it's woe for Western Grund and glad tidings for Gadheim, the Bavarian hamlet that's set to become the centre of a post-Brexit EU. Now, this story is thanks to French cartographers who have worked out the geographical center of the European Union as it currently stands. And with Britain leaving it, it is going to shift slightly east to Gadheim. The tiny hamlet only has 78 dwellers, and while it may not seem the biggest of deals, Bridget Heim, who is the mayor of Western Grund, who will set to be deposed, says why it is so important. We have about 10,000 visitors who come here every year just because of this, Heim says. The villagers mark the spot on a field on the edge of the village with an EU flag and some picnic tables. The official inauguration of the spot was accompanied by a brass band, a hiking route between Western Grund and the village of Gelnishausen-Meerholsch, the title holder from 2007 after Romania and Bulgaria joined. Having had a quick look at the map, both Gadheim and Western Grund are pretty central in Germany. So for the European Union's geographical centre to actually move outside of the country, there would have to be some serious shifts. If we're going to see more Western countries leave, then the most likely shift to get it across the German border would be to the Czech Republic. Although that could be an issue because the Czech's Premier Bohuslav Sobotka said at the start of last year, if Britain exits the EU, we might go too. And that's just about it for the weekly Brexit roundup on a Tuesday. Let us know what you think. Get in touch with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the usual channels. We're really interested to hear your views. If you've got any guests you'd like to suggest for the show, catch up with us at the website, Brexit Podcast. Until next time, the Brexit Podcast was brought to you by Tim Hemming, Jennifer Hahn, even with their bad back, and Warren Pohl, with theme music by Kevin MacLeod.